This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. I'm so excited for today because we've got none other than our friend Kyle Green, owner and founder of the Green Mortgage Team in Vancouver, back on the show. And this time coming with some really, really great tips for how to think about and strategize around financing in this interesting climate.
That's right. Interesting climate, to say the least. Some would call him an ace mortgage broker. we're talking today about basically the mortgage wall renewal, right? Everybody's been talking about this for a while, 2025 and 2026. A lot of people are facing renewals. And I feel like we are in one of the most uncertain moments, you know, in pushing close to 100 years, I would guess. So it's an interesting time to have Kyle on to really explain the ins and outs, what people should be thinking about, whether you're getting financing or a mortgage for the first time, or in this case, renewing. So stay tuned for that. There's no one better to discuss it than Kyle. So this is a great one.
Yeah, super excited. But before we get to that, Matt, of course, we are sponsored this week by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate team in Vancouver. And we do have a trivia question for the segment about trivia that remains nameless about Vancouver and Vancouver real estate sometimes.
Yeah, you know what? I got a couple of stats this week for you, Adam. You know, last week I touched on the Beatles. This week, I'm going back to the stats. We're talking March stats. We all know, and we had Andrew Liss on a couple of weeks ago talking about, you know, how sales volume really fell off a cliff in March. I got a couple stats for you here. One is, what is the slowest condo or townhome market neighborhood in Vancouver in March? That's a question. And
wait a second. City of Vancouver or Lower Mainland?
City of Vancouver. And then the flip side is hottest neighborhood in March. Sales volume, sales ratio.
Sales ratio. Okay.
But before we get to that, Adam, we don't want.
I had some clarifying questions.
Oh, okay. Clarify.
Okay. So we're talking about townhomes specifically.
No, we are talking condo townhome market, west and east side, the busiest neighborhood.
You want the submarket.
The submarket. We're talking Grandview Woodlands. We're talking Collingwood. We're talking Dunbar.
Okay.
We're going high and low. Which markets, in terms of sales ratio, which markets are performing, which aren't? And if you want, as a bonus question, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on detached as well, but we'll stick with the condo townhome market. And before we get to that, Adam, of course, well, we usually talk about one of our listings this week, which we could do, but you know, it dawned on me, Adam, that we've been highlighting listings and we've really not been highlighting exactly what that sold plan is, that when you click sell with us at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.com, you can download the sold plan. So I thought, instead of highlighting one of our listings this week, why don't we just really hammer out what the sold plan is?
Yeah, Matt. Well, it stands for start on launch date. So that's the acronym for sold. And really, it's a step-by-step guide. So it's got essentially you pick the launch date that you want to launch the listing. It tells you, gives you a little bit of a framework there and on things you should consider when you're launching a real estate listing. And then it gives you steps on what needs to happen in the weeks leading up to that launch. And this is based on, you know, 15 years of selling hundreds of homes in the Lower Mainland. And Vancouver is a very specific market. So I think if you're, if you know, there's certain things that we do here and practices that we do here in the industry that I think are often considered unique, I think, to the Lower Mainland. So it's a really thorough guide to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time. And we're big on prepping before the launch. The more upfront work you do, the better result you have.
That's right. And this works in hot markets to get you the best price. But in markets like today, you want to stand out. You want to stand out for the right reasons. The Sold Plan will help you do that. That start on launch date. It's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click sell with us. It's an immediate download. There's no reason why you shouldn't have this document. Adam, slowest condo townhome market in the city of Vancouver.
Oh boy. And submarket. So,
Should say it has to have had at least 5 listings. We're not doing like, you know, some, there was one condo. Like I think Hastings Sunrise had 2 condos or something like that. Both sold, so it's 100%. That doesn't count. We're talking, you know, it's got to have at least 5 listings.
All right. I'm going to go slowest Cole Harbour, busiest Mount Pleasant. Total guesses.
Okay. Any guess on the Cole Harbour percentage? That was correct.
Sub 8% sales ratio?
5%. 8 of 166 Ooh. Listings sold in March. 5% sales ratio.
Wow. Ben Smith thinks, though, I mean, and I don't think he's wrong. I think you could probably carve out a pretty spectacular deal in Cole Harbour.
Let's put it this way. There is probably 158 people that are trying to sell that want to talk to you right now from March. Hottest market.
Hottest market. I didn't put much. So I'm thinking it's Mount Pleasant or Kits is my feeling. But Mount Pleasant, man, I just feel like there's been so many people reaching out about Mount Pleasant lately and for years, but definitely seems to be still front and center for a lot of buyers. So yeah, I'm gonna stick to Mount Pleasant.
Okay, this was a little bit of a trick question, but I got a couple of, not a trick question, but there's an area with a lower number of listings that kind of hit it out of the park, a bit of a surprise, but maybe not. Champlain Heights, 67%. We've had a couple listings over there recently. Here's the thing, 6 of 9 places sold. It actually makes a lot of sense. City lease land, in a lot of cases,
yeah,
really family friendly, affordable housing, people moving through the market. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
That's good product over there.
It is.
The town, like that townhome stock. Yeah, that's great.
But you know what? I knew you weren't going to guess Champlain Heights and there was only 9 listings. In second place was Kits. 41 of 101 listings sold. That's 41%. Second place was Fairview at 39%, 42 of 107. So not Mount Pleasant.
You got to be sharp in all of these areas right now still to sell. But so Kits, Fairview, and what was Mount Pleasant's got to be up there. Basically, you're telling me the collar around, if you think of downtown as the head, there's a lot of activity in the collar still.
As we're speaking, Mount Pleasant, 22%. So significantly less. 33 of 152 listings condo and townhomes. Not a great market. It's still technically a seller's market, but Fairview and Kits are outperforming Mount Pleasant, that's for sure, at least in March.
Nice. Well, Matt, without further ado, why don't we cut to this conversation with Kyle Green? This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight 2 incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced, Nordic-inspired design for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior 1 to 3 bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at markon.ca/sonehouse. That's markon.ca/SOENHAUS, or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park, a simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's central downtown plaza. This is a time and the place to invest. Register at markon.ca/102andpark. That's markon.ca/102andpark.
Markon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Kyle Green, CEO of the Green Mortgage Team, and of course, past guest fan favorite. Welcome back, Kyle, and thanks for coming back on. How you doing?
I'm good. Can't complain.
Perfect. Well, hey, that's better than a lot of people are telling me right now. So good to hear. Kyle, for people who haven't heard you on the show before, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I've been a mortgage broker for 18 years. I own Green Mortgage, but I also have gone into the mortgage brokerage route as well. So I own a brokerage here in Vancouver called Origin Mortgages. It has about 55 agents funding about $1 billion a year in mortgages. And then I've also a software startup in the mortgage business too, to make it more efficient for mortgage brokers to assess where clients can fit. So yeah, all mortgages all day long. My wife always tells me, all you do is mortgages. I'm like, yeah, pretty much.
Well, you're the guy to talk to for this question. How's the market?
It depends on who you ask. So I'm actually having a really good year this year, which is odd. Not everybody is, but this year might be our second best year ever if we continue at this pace. Like I'm actually back to hiring people again. I don't know exactly why that is, other than I think that the market is more difficult. And so we do get a lot of calls when deals are difficult. A lot of, hey, can you help this? Can you save this? This is a weird property. The bank said that. Can you do it? So a lot of those secondary calls, I would say.
And are you getting, like in those situations, is it clients that are calling you? Like, hey, I'm working with, you know, somebody at the bank, for instance, and the deal doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yep.
That's the situation.
Yep. Happens a lot.
Interesting. So yep. So it's tough to put a deal together, and that's when they call you in.
Yep. Exactly.
Presumably you don't need to do hard deals. You can do easy ones as well.
I love easy deals too, Matt. Yeah. I would love to do more of them, to be honest. But you know what? It's interesting. There just aren't a lot of easy deals around right now. That's just the reality of it. So if you only specialize in easy deals, then this type of market generally is tougher for you as a broker. If you do the hard stuff, then when the market dries up and gets harder, then at least you're busy.
Yeah, for sure. You've started the year strong. We should timestamp this. It's April 11th. I think by the time this is released, it might be a couple weeks out from when we're talking. And that's, of course, important because every couple minutes, the world seems to shift in terms of what's going on. But the general narrative around the market this year was we ended 2024 with a little bit of momentum, a little bit of optimism. We moved into January, same thing. And then, of course, all the tariff talk started in February and the market kind of fell off. Did you find on your side that happened as well? Like, or what changed, I guess, with the tariff announcements and uncertainty from your end?
Yeah, I did find that definitely did change. So January, for instance, started off with a bang, and there's a lot of activity and a lot of first-time buyers or other, you know, homeowners looking at making a move. And then that buyer profile definitely has tapped the brakes. I think a lot of people are just kind of concerned and worried and monitoring and watching what's happening right now. I think overall, what I'd have to say is I think one of the reasons that maybe I'm not as slow is my typical buyer, more of them are self-employed and more of them are, you know, a little bit higher earners, et cetera. Mm-hmm. For them, what I find is they don't buy based on the market. They buy based on when it's the right time for them or the right house for them. So they don't really get too hung up on, oh, the market's doing this or the market's doing that. It's more about, oh, there's more inventory. Perfect. We can find the right house for us and we'll just use that as negotiating, you know, power and leverage, et cetera, to try to get a good deal. Self-employed borrowers are going to buy when they had a good year, not when the market's really, really good, right? So I think different buying cycles based on the different kind of groups that you face. Interestingly as well, I think that looking at the type of groups of people that are affected the most by the tariffs, it's not a lot of Vancouverites that will be affected by this. Most of the industries and cities that are affected by the tariffs are in, you know, oil and gas and manufacturing, et cetera. Not a lot of that here in Vancouver.
Right, right. So I'm kind of curious on your take. We've had over the last couple of days, you know, there's the Trump blinked, right, is the narrative around putting a 90-day freeze on the reciprocal tariffs. And a lot of that had to do with the bond yield in the States, as I understand. Can you talk a little bit about what, if anything, that means for Canada, what the bond yield's doing in Canada? Basically, as of this moment, how is the outlook for mortgage rates, I guess, changing, fixed and variable? Because it feels like I've heard more about bond yields in the last 3 days than I have in a long time. And that's saying something considering we have the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. So what's your take on how things are changing here?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So just to give you some, or our listeners, some understanding about why that's important, bond yields is what primarily impacts fixed rates. So fixed rates are based on a number of different things. However, the bond yields themselves is the primary item that indicates that. So if the bond yields are going up, then fixed rates are going up. If bond yields are going down, then fixed rates are usually going down. So what we've seen in the last few months here, and especially the last few weeks, is these tariff circumstances and situations and the reciprocal tariffs and back and forth and the escalations that could possibly happen are really going to slow down both economies. I think that that's the change in the narrative. Initially, it was, oh, the U.S. is going to raise these tariffs. It's going to affect Canada more than it's going to affect the U.S. And now I think that the narrative is, oh, actually, it's going to affect the U.S. too. This is not good for either country. Yeah. And that pushes the yields down. And that's where we see the stock market had some crazy tumbles downwards. And the bond yields, then money flocks to safety in those situations. So if you're issuing bonds and you have a lineup of people at the door that all fled the stock market and want to park money with you, then you don't have to issue bonds at 3%. You can drop the rate down to 2.5% and then people will still buy your bonds. That's effectively how that works.
What about in Canada? Are the yields reacting in the same way? Like, has the outlook for fixed rates changed in the last, call it, month or two? Or are we still, you know, where we're at the start of the year?
It changes every week. It changes every day. You know, it changes all the time. It's crazy. Just the other day, we saw the bond yields go. So from last Friday, the 4th, until today, they're up 0.4%, which is pretty significant. So, you know, we see those make major swings back and forth all the time. And it's hard to quite put your finger on exactly where things will be even just a week from now. But there's been major swings back and forth. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, I don't know how much Trump cares about the stock market. And we're, you know, hearing that maybe he doesn't, but, you know, it'd be surprising to most that if he didn't care about the stock market and what's happening there, because, you know, that would be very un-Trump-like. And so, you know, there's something to be said for, okay, well, the stock market had really bad days and then he paused the tariffs and the stock market recovered very quickly. Okay, well, how much of that is influencing his decision-making? So it seems like, you know, the weird thing that we're finding right now is the tariffs coming in are likely to have a short-term decrease to interest rates overall. And I think that we're seeing that even in the bond market, where, by the way, most most economists were not predicting that. So they were thinking, I don't know if we're going to see bonds much lower than they already are. However, the Bank of Canada may cut, you know, we're talking about maybe 0.5% further from where we are today. So prime rate now, as of the recording, is 4.95. And there's talk that we probably are going to likely see about 0.5% further cuts on the Bank of Canada. So anybody in a variable rate mortgage would benefit from that. But on the fixed rate side, that's not what we're hearing. We're going to be hearing that, the bonds can't really go much lower than they are right now. And this is a concern moving forward longer term, where most economists are predicting a slow tick upwards with the bond yields, which would cause the fixed rates to increase over time. So they're actually predicting, hey, Bank of Canada might cut short term and then maybe stay flat for a while. And then over, you know, in year 4 or 5, start to rise slowly. On the fixed rate side of things, it's kind of predicting that we're already at the bottom and we're likely to be slowly rising over time.
And does that, let me put it this way. So if you're looking at financing a property today or refinancing or renewing, which is really what I was kind of hoping to talk to you about primarily, what's the play? Because if you go into a variable product, I think the consensus or what it, maybe the consensus is the wrong word, but everybody's expecting a couple further rate cuts. But if the 5-year fixed or is at its lowest, should you lock in on that 5-year fixed? The volatility in general seems like enough to make anyone sweat. But what are you advising people right now, Kyle?
So the analysis is showing that if you went in variable, you'd likely save bit more money than if you went with a fixed rate. However, the issue is that on a moving forward basis, if the fixed rates have in fact, you know, are at their lowest, I think a lot of people are just thinking, I don't want to gamble. I don't want to roll the dice. Maybe it's the same person that rolled the dice back in 2021, 2022, and all of a sudden the interest rates skyrocketed, right? So the analysis, if what the people are predicting comes to fruition and is true, then it does show that a variable would stand to benefit, because with the 2 potential cuts that are kind of getting priced in the marketplace, that would push you, most variable rate mortgage holders would be under 4% interest if that's the case, which is a little bit lower than what most people are getting on fixed rate mortgages, which, and the rates would likely stay there for at least, you know, a couple of years is the current prediction. So a variable should outperform the fixed if that comes to fruition. It's the same people, however, that back in May of 2022 thought the prime rate was going to cap out at 4.45 or 4.7, and it went a few percent higher than that. So right. I think I haven't seen this many clients take a 5-year fixed rate in probably 3 years, 4 years. It's a major shift in borrower philosophy, I would say, to say, hey, you know what? I don't want to gamble right now. A low 4% rate for 5 years sounds good to me. Worried about Trump, worried about the, you know, economic future, because ultimately the tariffs are inflationary, which should cause, in theory, interest rates to rise.
Right. It's funny that you say that, because it makes a lot of sense, right? One, those scars are still pretty fresh from people that got burned, you know, in the post-COVID run-up in rates. But secondly, I feel like we're running, and by we, I mean, I guess he is running a kind of global experiment with the global economy right now, is so unpredictable and there's so much uncertainty that I feel like I would gladly pay a little bit more every month to lock in and ride out the next 4 years. So it seems like that makes a lot of sense. So just for listeners, right now, if you're looking to either renew your mortgage or get into the market, so you're saying 5-year fixed, probably low 4s. If you're in a variable product, the discount to that is how much?
Yeah, it just depends on whether it's conventional or insured, because there are differences there. Like insured mortgages for 5-year fixed are, you know, you're touching like 3.99% for insured for fixed. And then for variable, you're looking at about prime minus about 0.4 to 0.5 if it's conventional, and then prime minus 0.7 or prime minus 0.8 if it's insured. So that's kind of the spread right now.
Okay. If your bank's approaching you, so moving back to this idea of somebody, you know, the mortgage renewal wall, right? Is this is what they're calling it this year, 2025 and into 2026. somebody's renewing in the next 6 months, their bank is reaching out to them. Do you have a sense of what kind of offers are being made off the top with people that are having their lenders reach out?
Yeah. So interestingly, a lot of the lenders have been actually very competitive on renewals, which is not always true. So what we've been finding is we have a lot of clients coming up for renewal, and our process generally is, first of all, if you're coming up for renewal, should you be renewing the mortgage or should you be refinancing? Because that immediately changes the direction and the process here. Because if you've got 50 grand in consumer debt, you should almost absolutely refinance, because you should be rolling up that consumer debt into the mortgage at a much lower cost, and that will save you significant interest overall and payments. Maybe accessing additional capital to invest if you're feeling comfortable with that, accessing money for renovations. And or the last one, which I find a lot of people are doing too, when you renew the mortgage, you're just signing a piece of paper and keeping the terms the same, except for the rate and therefore the payments. But your amortization, for instance, would be remain the same. So if you took a, you know, if you're a first-time home buyer 5 years ago and you're in a 25-year amortization to start, now you have 20 years left, that payment difference might be too high for you to be able to withstand. And so you can actually re-amortize it if you refinance back out to as long as 30 years. And so by doing so, you can actually reduce the payment shock of seeing the interest rates basically double. At least re-amortizing the mortgage will keep the payments about the same. So that's the first thing, is just, is it a refinance or is it a renewal? Because if it's just a renewal, you say, you know what, I'm happy with the terms. I'm okay with the higher payments. I don't need money for any purpose or reason. We usually just tell our clients, well, go to your bank first and just see what they're offering you, because the banks have been very competitive on the renewals lately. And it's kind of an interesting time right now. I think because there's so many renewals coming up now, the banks are thinking, well, like any business, what's the cheapest customer to have? A new customer or an existing customer?
Yeah.
Right? An existing customer.
Especially with the slower market, right?
Yeah, exactly. So an existing customer is worth fighting over. And they're finding that customers are more educated about what is a competitive market rate and what is not. And so we're finding that in general, the bank offers on the renewals, which is not good for us, of course. So we'd love it when the bank offers you a high rate and then we can replace it and that's how we make money, right? But I think the reality is banks are way more competitive on the renewals now than they ever have been, because there's less business to fight over. So you might as well just retain your book as much as you can. And just in general, it's just so much harder to get a mortgage today. There's so much paperwork. It takes so much longer to do. And ultimately, that increased the costs of getting a mortgage done. So if you have to re-underwrite the deal, you have a lot of costs involved. You have to, if it's a broker-fed deal, then you're paying a broker. If it's a mobile specialist at the bank, you're paying a mobile specialist to commission. You're paying the back office underwriting team to underwrite the deal. You're paying the funding team. There's all these costs involved with funding a new mortgage. And I've actually seen it where the bank offers a really low rate for renewal. I say, well, that's really good. And the client says, well, I think maybe refinancing for this or this. It's like, okay, well, check with the bank and see what they say. And they come back like surprised. And they say, well, actually the renewal rate is only for renewing the mortgage. If I want to refinance, then the rate is 0.3% higher. And it's like, huh, that's kind of interesting. So they're literally charging a higher rate with the same customer if it's a refinance versus a renewal.
Can you talk about the different hoops you have to jump through in terms of renewal and refinance? Like,
oh, it's a very different hoop.
yeah. So, maybe just spell it out for the listeners.
Yeah. Well, to get a refinance done, it's a hoop that's on fire and it's 10 feet up in the air, and you have to jump through it and do a quadruple, front flip to get through it. If it's a Sounds renewal, easy. Then the hoop is just sitting there on the ground. You just have to take one step forward and step into it. So literally in a renewal, you just sign a piece of paper and it's done. So it's very easy, very smooth process from that perspective. If it's a refinance, then you're reapplying as if you were buying the home, as if you were getting any financing. It's the exact same process to switch it, even if you keep the terms the same. So you can do what's called a switch or a transfer, which moves the mortgage from the current institution to a new institution. And if there's no new money, sometimes that is the best or more competitive option. Like if you got an insured mortgage initially, if you refinance and add money to the mortgage, it's no longer insured or insurable. And those are usually the insured or insurable buckets, or where you get the best pricing typically. So sometimes just moving the mortgage over at the same amount and same amortization schedule, et cetera, but to a new institution will get you the best rate. Not always, but often. And in those circumstances, it's still, however, a full mortgage process. You're still doing an application, supplying your income, supplying all the supporting documents to do that. So it has to be worth your while to do it.
What about the stress test in that case?
Yeah.
Is that you have to pass the stress test again?
Refinance, you have to pass the stress test. But if you're transferring the mortgage at renewal and it was originally approved by a federally regulated lender, like a big bank or a lot of the non-bank lenders that mortgage brokers use are also federal, then you don't have to stress test it to move it to a new institution. So they actually base the qualifications based on the actual interest rate at that time. The thought process is that if it was done by a federally regulated lender at funding, then it was stress tested to get the mortgage and get in the door. So there's no need to re-stress test it again. But if it's a refinance or you're moving it from a non-federally regulated lender like a credit union, then you have to stress test it to move it somewhere else.
I guess then in that case, hypothetically, you're with one of the big five banks, you're wanting to refinance with the same bank. No stress test, if I understand right.
So refinance, increasing the loan size triggers stress test automatically, no matter where you go with it. But if you keep the loan amount the same and just move it to a new institution, and if it's already with a federally regulated lender, then there's no stress test.
Okay. So when you're talking about potentially rolling in consumer debt, you know, all the kind of smart things that people do to reduce their interest costs in their life, that's when stress test and potentially very challenging circumstances to get the refi.
Yep, that's right.
If you're in a situation where you're at the top end of your borrowing power.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. So it can be harder to qualify. And that's the next step usually is, you know, if you, let's say that you do get a really good offer from the bank, but maybe we can move you over to a new lender at a better, lower interest rate. You know, you do have to look at that, like, okay, do you actually qualify to move it? Because some people just actually don't qualify to move the mortgage. In some cases, you just have to renew it. Some people have lost their job. It's like, well, sign the piece of paper before the bank looks at anything else, right? Just take that because I can't move you. You won't re-qualify.
So is there, I guess, just thinking kind of strategically, and next up will be kind of how this process actually plays out, but the bank or your lender offers you, okay, hey, you can renew at 4.25. Okay. And you're like, okay, that seems okay. Like, I guess, can you table that, talk to 9 different lenders, including them, about refi? If it turns out you can't qualify, and then go back to that renewal? Is that possible?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Just be mindful of a important distinction on renewals is that sometimes the rate is only held, like if you call them and you go over rate option, or a lot of banks are now switching the renewals into like a new mortgage application, like an app on your phone or whatever you can do to renew it. Sometimes those offers that they have are for very short periods of time. They might only be good for 3 days or 5 days. And so initially I thought, oh, that's just a sales tactic, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sign now, you got to take it now or else it's gone. Actually, here's an interesting observation that I had fairly recently on why they're doing this. So we talked earlier in the conversation about how much volatility there is in the marketplace with Trump and everything. Well, if you get a new mortgage and you have a rate hold, that rate hold is good for 120 days. And so the cost to hedge the money for 120 days is significantly more than it is to hedge it for 3 to 5 days. And so that's another reason why the pricing for a renewal is way cheaper, because if they're only issuing the rate hold for 3 to 5 days, the hedging cost is significantly cheaper. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that the renewals right now can be a lot cheaper on the interest rate than a new deal moving to a new lender, because the new lender is going to say, well, our rate is this, but it's because it's held for 120 days, right? So it's kind of an interesting observation.
So somebody who's listening that doesn't, you know, is not tapped into, you know, what the intricacies of what a really great mortgage rate looks like, you know, they see they have 3 days to make a decision. What can they actually do? Like, is it immediately call a broker? Is it go online and do some research? Is it get excited because it's potentially a good rate and lock it in? Like, what would be your suggestion in terms of how to approach verifying a first verifying and then potentially negotiating that renewal?
Yeah. You know, do you remember the old Geico commercials? It was like 5 minutes can save you, you know, 5% or more or whatever. Something like that.
Yeah, that's
the same kind of thing here with renewals. Take 5 minutes, take the offer that you've got from the other bank, send your favorite mortgage broker an email and say, hey, I just got offered 3-year fixed, 5-year fixed variable. Those are probably the three most commonly chosen terms. And that kind of captures most by borrower's needs as far as, you know, do you want a shorter term fixed, a longer term fixed, or do you want to go variable and ride that out, see what happens. So if you do that, then a mortgage broker, typically we would start and look at, hey, assuming that you qualify and the best rate out there, that rate that you have been offered is very good and you should take it. Or assuming best case scenario, I could save you X amount. And then you want to make sure that you actually know what that dollar figure is too. So let's say you have a $200,000 mortgage and you want a 3-year fixed rate. And let's say that I can get you a rate that's 0.2% lower. Well, do the math on that. 0.2% on 200 grand is $400 a year in savings times 3 years. It's $1,200. Remember how high that hoop was that you got to jump through? It's 10 feet high and it's on fire. And like, is it really worth it for you to do that to save $1,200? Now, in a $2 million mortgage, it's very different.
Just don't go out to eat a couple times, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Now, on the other flip side of the coin, if it's a $2 million mortgage, okay, well, now it's not $400 in savings a year. It's $4,000 a year in savings. Or maybe it's a 5-year term instead of a 3-year term. The dollar amount of savings actually becomes more significant and more worth your while. So that would be the next step is, okay, well, what's the actual dollar figure for the savings? Make sure that we're aligned on that, that it makes sense. And then if you still say, yeah, like, let's do this, then you would start that mortgage application process.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible. This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Event Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
So somebody gets in touch with their favorite mortgage broker. They work through those numbers. If it makes sense, is the generally the way it works, okay, actually you'll save X amount. Let's go with the, you know, with the new lender. Or do you play them off each other? Like, how does that negotiation process generally work out?
Yeah. I mean, generally, if you're going to play them off each other, then you usually want to do that before you start the mortgage process, right? So if you get the list and get the rates and you go back to the broker and say, hey, I've got these interest rates available. What do you think? And the broker says, oh, I can beat it. I can go here. then usually what I ask my customers, and this is because I don't want to get inundated with a bunch of applications that don't fund as well.
Yeah, of course.
And the borrower doesn't want to go through this. Then it's more of a matter of, hey, do you want to start the process now and go through the application, or do you want to give the bank one more shot, right? To see if they'll match it? Because what occasionally happens is later on during the process, the bank finds out, oh, you're leaving? Oh, never mind. We can give you this rate. And it's like, well, how come when I asked you, you said this was our best rate? And then all of a sudden now the best rate has changed and the market hasn't changed, right? It's it's frankly a very frustrating part of the process is you ask the bank what their absolute best rate is and they say, that's it. But let me know if somebody else comes up with a better rate and I'll see what I can do. It's like, well, what what is the best rate? You know? So it's it can be challenging for both borrower and for brokers too, because you only make money if a mortgage funds. Nobody wants to go through the art of collecting all those documents, processing it, getting an approval and all that stuff, and then find out that the bank was just going to match it. So sometimes you just say, hey, well, I could give you this. Take that and go back to the bank and give them one last shot. But then if we're doing it moving forward, then we should probably both agree that, like, no matter what they come back with later, that we're going to work together because the bank has had their opportunity to take their shot.
Yeah. So somebody's end date on their five-year fixed is November 2025. When can they expect to hear from their lender? Like, can you walk us through, assuming that that's the end of their term? Like, when should they start thinking about this? Should they be thinking about it already? And when can they expect that you have 24 hours to make a decision, start sweating and get in touch with your favorite broker?
Yeah. So lenders in the past used to do a lot more early renewals where 6 or even 9 months in advance of the renewal, they would say, hey, here's an early renewal option. Now, most customers are not really interested in taking an early renewal because if they took a mortgage 5 years ago in November of 2021, they're at like 2% or under 2%, right? So why would I renew that early to jump up to 4%? So I haven't seen as many of them do that lately. And in fact, it's moved the opposite direction where sometimes once you're within the 4-month rate hold where you could get a rate hold through a different institution, sometimes you're sitting there when they're trying to reach out to the bank and they say, oh, it's too early. And you're like, well, but I need to know and make a decision on whether I should be shopping this or not. And again, that's another area of some frustration from customers, which is, well, I don't know if I should stay with my current lender or go somewhere else. You know, I know what a rate is if I moved into a different institution, but I don't want to do that unless it makes financial sense to do it. So one of the interesting, things that we're looking at right now is I do have a couple of customers, literally just this week, a few of them, some of them that are a bit more in tune with the bond market in particular, like, hey, I just saw the bond market shot up. Can I do this early? And so some of our clients are going to get their documents in, get everything prepared, have a file ready to go. We have a file prepared and we can click a button just in case this whole Trump situation causes rates to accelerate and go up. Then number one, we have a file in, and it may even make sense at some point if the rates keep climbing, where all of a sudden our rate holds might be actually worth it to even pay the 3-month interest penalty to break the mortgage early and then move over. In an ideal world, if rates are going to move up, ideally they don't move up until you're within 4 months of your rate expiration, because you can get a 4-month rate hold through a new institution. They'll hold that rate until the renewal date. And then if rates keep climbing, and the existing lender's only going to offer the renewal closer to the renewal date, then you might all of a sudden realize that because they held off and giving you that that interest rate, you're actually better off to move it to a new institution.
Hmm. Smart. I don't know, Kyle, your business is maybe a little different than the kind of bread and butter mortgage brokers out there, but I'm guessing you're having a lot of conversations and you have had a lot of conversations with people renewing with those monthly costs, close to doubling. You kind of mentioned before about refinancing and pushing out the amortization period as one strategy. Are there any other strategies? Like, what are you telling people that are like, okay, I'm, a fireman and a nurse. Like, this is what we bring in every month. We can't push this out to double our monthly carrying costs. Like, that just doesn't the math doesn't work. So what are the strategies available to people in that circumstance, apart from selling?
Yeah, I know, right? To be frank, there aren't a lot of great options out there. That's the major issue. Now, some of the options that weren't available a few years ago are a little bit better today. So I'll give you an example. When the, you know, when the crisis really hit, when rates were skyrocketing, we had a lot of customers asking us, what can I do? I can't afford these payments. There is an option to move into an interest-only mortgage. And that's generally not, it wasn't very utilized when the rates skyrocketed because there's a big gap between variable rates and fixed rates. And most interest-only products are tied to the Bank of Canada rate. So if the, even going interest-only, but then at a higher interest rate actually caused the payments to be a very minor difference. But now with the Bank of Canada dropping and projected to keep dropping, interest-only products may make sense. There's actually a credit union here locally that has a fixed rate interest-only product, just restructured somebody's rental property where they did a couple of things. We've been working with them for literally 6 or 9 months on all these little bits and pieces. Let's clean up this, clean up this, clean up this. And we've kind of been nudging the payments down. But front to back, overall, I think they said they're saving about $4,000 a month by doing this and this and this and this. And then now the one rental property is being restructured as a fixed rate interest-only mortgage. And so their payments are being reduced quite a bit. Especially in a rental property, you have a better incentive to not pay down the principal because that interest is tax deductible anyways. But an interest-only mortgage is one solution, of course. And most importantly, it's just...
So just to be clear, in that situation, you lock in for 4 or 5 years. And at the end of 4 or 5 years, your principal is exactly as it was at the start. You're just literally paying that interest only, as you said.
Correct. Yeah. Interest only. A line of credit by definition is also interest only. However, you can make extra payments and you can opt into that if you want to. So you have more latitude to decide if you want to make extra payments. So that's one thing. But frankly, other than interest only products, which now that the prime rate has dropped quite a bit, now there actually is a more substantial savings of not paying the principal down. The only other really great options is if you have any other debt, probably makes sense to roll it into the mortgage. The payments per dollar borrowed on unsecured debts are almost always higher than a secured mortgage. And then secondly is just re-amortizing that mortgage over 30 years. Those are the best tools that the, you know, a general, somebody in the general public would have and still gives you a good interest rate. The interest only products usually are just a little bit more expensive.
But you know, the fact of the matter is, and I feel like, you know, maybe some people have been waiting for rates to come down further. It does seem like we're, you know, we're talking within 0.5% of where the Bank of Canada, or at least that's what I'm hearing. And that's, I think, what you said as well. Like a couple more cuts this year, potentially. We're probably on the fixed side. The bond yields are probably as low as they go. Like if you're in a situation where your monthly costs are something you can't afford, it's not like wait it out for another year and we're coming, you know, we're going back to where we were in 2020, 2021, right? Like unless something dramatic happens. But there's, I guess if you're thinking about something like an interest only payment on a rental property, that probably makes more sense. But if it's your principal residence, and if you can't swing that right now, there's a good chance in 4 or 5 years, you're probably not going to be able to swing it then either.
Yeah, exactly. I think you have to, you know, in finance, especially with bridge lending or private lending, a lot of the focus is on what's called the exit strategy. So what is the exit strategy? If you can't afford the payments now, is that going to change in the future? So maybe you're self-employed and let's say, for instance, you're in film. Well, film has been hammered a lot with COVID and then the writer strikes, et cetera. Like you would expect that it will get better, not worse moving forward. Hopefully it can't get worse than it already has been. Although I don't know what's going to happen with the tariffs and how that affects people in film. But regardless, you'd hope that, okay, a reasonable exit strategy is that things should be better. So that would make a bit more sense to me to say, well, let's go interest only. And when things normalize, you'll be back to making good money again as you have been in the past and you'll be okay. But you know, when you brought up the situation of like a nurse and a firefighter, incomes are a bit more fixed from that perspective, other than picking up extra shifts as a nurse. You know, what do you do if you can't afford it now on a standard mortgage? I mean, being in an interest-only product forever is not a it's not a great fit. You do pay more interest, by the way, on interest-only products. So because A, you're not paying down the mortgage, but also B, the rate is usually higher. So it's not a great solution unless you think that things will change in the near future. And yeah, as you said, rates are probably not going to come down a lot more. You know, there is some talk that with the tariffs, like BMO thinks if the tariffs are here and here to stay based on what was originally proposed, that the Bank of Canada might cut, you know, a further 0.75 or 1% from where we are, where we were expected to land. But I wouldn't bet on that. I definitely wouldn't bet on that.
Yeah. Oof. What, in your experience in this renewal period where so many people are going through the process this year, what's the if you could pinpoint something that you see that people are getting wrong, one mistake, what would that be?
I mean, never take the first offer that the bank gives you. That's, you know, you should, as soon as they give you an offer, say, oh, well, that's way too high. I think
even if it's, you know, competitive, you push back.
Even if you don't have a job, you push back because they don't know this information. So you push back, right? Oh, just, I mean, grind it out. Why not? And usually the process, I mean, I just went through a renewal on one of my rental properties and I did the same thing. I ground it out. I still got a rate that's a touch higher than what I could have gotten elsewhere, but that time value of money kind of thing plays a part, right? We're like, it's not really worth moving it for 0.1 or 0.2%. So I'm just going to keep it. But I'm not telling the bank that. I'm telling them, oh, like I can get a better rate. I am a broker. I know
you got
exactly
all the time in the world.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I'm going to need you to push this back with your manager. And, you know, I'm not signing it until I get a better rate. I'm looking for this. This is my target. And have them go back and forth. And then you get that. And now I was able to get that held until the end of the month. And so now I'm just watching the bond market to see what happens. Unfortunately, this week was not good for the bond market. So it's moving in the opposite direction. But at least the rate that they quoted me is held until the renewal date now. And so now I'm just waiting and waiting. I'm kind of watching the bond market. And if there's a dip again, then I'll go back and ask them to give me a better rate. So you can kind of play that game a little bit with them. And
how quickly do the fixed rates change? Like, are if you're monitoring that day in, day out, and I'm just thinking especially in Canada as well, but the yields have risen quite dramatically in the US and less so in Canada, but significantly, right? Is that like, hey, look what happened yesterday. I'm calling at 9 a.m. and, you know, we can lock something in and it's actually like shows up in your fixed rate options?
Close to, probably 2 to 3 days. And they also have to move and then stick. So the lenders don't want to...
Volatility, yeah.
Yeah, they don't want to keep moving it every day because, oh, once up, went up, okay, now we're going to change our rates up. And then, oh, it came back down, dropped the rates again. So that won't usually happen. But as an example, so last week we saw decreases to the bond market and a couple of lenders had some minor decreases to interest rates of maybe 0.1%, even though the bond market had moved down maybe 0.3%. And then this week, bond market has gone up 0.4%. And now I'm just literally today, because they moved up earlier in the week, like Tuesday, Wednesday. Now on Friday, a few lenders going up 0.1%. So, you know, they don't move completely in lockstep because the market does often correct when there's a large movement. So you have to see that the rates move and then they stick at that level, whether it's lower or higher, for usually about 2 or 3 days. And then there's usually some movement with interest rates.
So maybe as a final question, Kyle, and I won't put you on the spot personally, although it sounds like you're watching the bond rates. So for your rental property, you're thinking fixed, but variable or fixed right now, what's your, if somebody puts it to you, what are you telling them? 2025?
Yeah. Yeah. So on that particular rental property, it's owned with a partner and it was kind of a flip of the coin kind of thing. I could go either way. So I said,
and I am not asking for your personal, if you want, please tell, but I'm not trying to get into
on that one. It was fixed. So I think at this point, I'm probably doing a little bit of both. I'll probably hedge a little bit, have some variable, have some fixed. So here's the other side of the coin. Last year, for instance, you could get prime minus one. Prime minus 0.8, 0.9, et cetera, was getting handed out. And now the discounts aren't as good. And so If you can get a good deep discount on a variable, I'm more inclined to go variable. But if the discount is not as good, then fixed rate might actually be more attractive. So what that's the other consideration.
And what is the logic with those discounts? Because used to be attractive.
Yeah. The factors that prompt the Bank of Canada to move interest rates also is one of the same factors that affects the discount off of prime to move. The long story short of it is that the discount off of the prime is generally a factor of what the difference between government-issued debt is and privately issued debt is. So a bank, for instance, if a bank is to lend out or to raise capital to lend out, if it's more expensive for them compared to the government, then usually that cost of funds, they call it, is higher. And that usually means the discounts off of prime will shrink. So that it's really hard to like find a metric, by the way, that will tell you this. The easiest way generally is high volatility generally means that spread is going to decrease. And so the tough part is, you know, last year when we can get a discount of 1% off prime, that was the best time to take a variable. Because sure enough, the Bank of Canada cut. Now you'd be at a really deep discount, which would have been great. The problem is it was so early that people were like not ready to take that higher rate, not ready to take the risk. And we've seen this in a number of recent circumstances where the prime rate, the discount off of prime will shrink, and that precedes the Bank of Canada cutting. So the reason that the discounts shrink is the same reason the Bank of Canada might say, oh, there's high volatility, there's high risk in this marketplace. We need to lower interest rates. Maybe we need to print more money, et cetera, et cetera. So in the subprime crisis of 2008, variable rates were prime plus 0.8%. That was a standard variable rate, which is crazy to think of but that was the rate at the time. In COVID, rates went from prime minus 0.7 to prime within 3 business days. Like every lender, like Domino's, all fell. And in this climate, it's been a kind of a slow compression. Now, in each of those circumstances, the spread and the variable discounting got worse right before the Bank of Canada cut. And so there is some thoughts that maybe the Bank of Canada may cut aggressively. And so that's, again, why a variable could outperform a fixed is if they do cut very aggressively, more than 0.5%, regardless of the discount off prime, you just want to be tied to the prime rate, right? But yeah, it's a lot harder. You can't just look up and pull up like you can with fixed rates, pull up the bond chart and know where the discounts off of prime are heading. A little bit harder. You have to kind of triangulate it with a number of different sources that are much harder to find. But generally speaking, if there is a lot of talk about the Bank of Canada needing to cut, unfortunately, the discount off of prime is also compressing because of the same reasons.
Last question for you, Kyle. Are we in a better lending environment for regular folks renewing by the end of this year? Or are we, you know, with the talk of inflation and everything else, are we potentially in a worse? What's best guess?
Probably worse. Yeah, there's already some banks that are, so Bank of Montreal just changed their policies where if you are in certain industries, and they have a long list of it, if you're self-employed and in one of these industries, their debt service ratio, so the amount of your income that can be used towards servicing your debts.
Are we both in one of those industries?
Yes. Both of us are. Okay, finance and real estate is not are on the hit list. Oil and gas manufacturing. Surprise. I know, right? Yeah. So they're tightening up the debt servicing ratio for people in those industries. So not for employees, by the way, but for people that are self-employed in those industries. And that's something that actually was, usually you don't see that. It's usually behind the curtain stuff. So it's interesting that we were able to get that information and data. But I suspect things will get worse before they get better. If there are projected job losses to come, then you can expect the banks to start to tighten up.
So assuming that tighten up in terms of financing, but potentially for renewals remaining the same.
Renewals doesn't matter. They don't requalify you in a renewal.
Yeah.
So you're
good. But the circumstances, like one thing I'm thinking of is somebody's renewing, say in early 2026. And they're sitting listening to this right now and going, okay, they're talking about inflation. They're talking about the depression. They're talking about recession. Oh my God, my anxiety is going through the roof. Is there anything I can do? You know, should I just sit and wait? I know you did mention like your really sophisticated clients are getting everything ready and really monitoring the bond market. But you're basically saying, if I understand right, if you're just renewing, you're probably in a similar spot to today.
Yeah. So if you're renewing, you're not re-qualifying and you're going to be okay. So you don't have to worry about getting the mortgage. But if you're worried about where rates may head in the future, some people will just say, I'm going to cut my losses and break the mortgage early and lock in for 5 years.
Yeah.
The challenge is that people need to see that the rates are increasing before they make that decision. But the problem is, if rates are increasing, then you're losing money every time that they go up. So you kind of have to commit to getting all your documents in, getting all the information, updating an application, which then allows you to hold a rate. And then you can kind of play that game. And we've done that before, and we will be doing it moving forward, where we'll have some clients say, okay, I want to have a rate hold on for my renewal coming up. And if you get that rate held and locked in, and over the next 90 days of the 120-day rate hold, if rates have gone up 0.5%, or heaven forbid, like 1%, which I don't think would happen, by the way, but if it did, then there's going to be a certain breaking point where, yeah, it makes sense. Pay the 3-month interest penalty and get this new rate for this rate we have held for 5 years, because the penalty might be $3,000. But if you take this mortgage and rates don't go back down, then you're going to save $8,000 over 5 years. You know, like there's a mathematical formula for that.
Totally. Yeah. Well, lots to think about. Really appreciate your time. We do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions to end the show. Can you stick around for that?
I can, yeah.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been recognized as Multifamily Home Builder of the Year for 10 years in a row and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with 2 fitness areas, 3 children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
What is one restaurant, Kyle, that you think more people should know about in Metro Vancouver?
You know what a really fun restaurant is? The Eatery. Have you ever been to The Eatery?
No.
No, it's a really funky sushi place. I think it's on Broadway. It might be 4th, but it's on like West 4th or West Broadway. Super funky. If you haven't been there and you like sushi, it's a bit more like North American sushi, but the decor, the vibe, everything is very, very cool. So The Eatery, very cool spot.
All right. Good one. We've asked you this one before, but you've given some great book recommendations in the past. Anything you and the team are reading that you'd recommend, or even just something for fun?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really read for fun. all my books, my wife always gives me flack for that. It's like, well, you read more books. I'm like, because I can't help myself. It has to be like, So this is a bit of an aside, but we're going through currently, we're doing a major review of our entire process. So at different stages of the process, we're kind of isolating people into different groupings of people. So there's first-time buyers, homeowners, and investors. And at different stages of the process, you're thinking different things and you have different concerns, you have different questions. We've gone through that and our retreat, we kind of pinned everybody down into different groups. And now we've kind of started to map out what are those questions that we'd be answering. So at each stage now, our customers will have an email saying, hey, here are some things you might be thinking about at this stage. Here's some more content and information, some videos, some something to read, et cetera. And so we're reading a book called They Ask, You Tell. And it basically talks about creating a system or a process for when customers ask questions that are really relevant, then you figure out how you can answer those questions. And it's more about like blogging and search engine optimization and stuff like that. But we're kind of including that into our workflows.
Into like a system. Yeah, yep. That's interesting. They ask, you tell.
Yeah.
What's a strong opinion you held 5 years ago that has completely changed today?
Go variable. Maybe not. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of anything else. That would be a good one. Yeah.
What is one of the most expensive mistakes you've made and what did it teach you?
I mean, this is kind of relevant for us right now. So some listeners might know that we bought a 7-unit property in Victoria and it was already a short-term rental. And we renovated, poured a bunch of money into that. And then the government decided to ban short-term rentals. And we're in the process of getting a hotel business license, which we're actually getting very close to the final stages of getting that, which is wonderful because we might actually stand to benefit from this whole fiasco after a lot of stress and a lot of money spent with lawyers, yeah, et cetera. So,
has it been vacant or what have you been doing?
We've been occupying, we've been running it. I mean, it's longer term
rentals or
no,
just for people that don't remember, you had like specific rooms, like the Egyptian room or whatever, you know, it was kind of
West Coast and the Orcapad and that kind of stuff. So basically things that are available to you tourism stuff that's available to you in Victoria.
Okay, so not the Egyptian
room. Yeah, not the Egyptian room. No, it was not. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice try. Yeah. So I guess overall, things can happen and not every investment will turn out to be profitable. And I still have faith that our investment will still turn a profit for us, especially if we get a hotel business license. All the other Airbnbs in the area are getting shut down. And then we're one of the only options you can rent a hotel with a kitchenette in it. We might actually stand to benefit from all this. But if we don't, I just think we did a lot in 2021. I bought a mortgage brokerage. We bought that property. And I just think that sometimes we all have a habit of getting, I don't want to use the word greedy, but maybe that's the best word for it. You just start to like, oh, that's a great opportunity. That's a great opportunity. Yeah. And I think when things are good, you kind of have to take some cash off the table because I can tell you that the follow-up of not having that couple hundred grand in the bank instead of having it invested into that investment, which then wasn't turning a profit, I would much rather have had that money in the bank to weather the storm that followed, which was for us in the mortgage industry, 2023 was a really, really tough year. Revenues were a third of what they were in 2021 and 2023, and you're cutting staff members and doing all these things. And you start to focus on short-term things, not long-term things, which isn't a great way to run a business. So it's a lesson that I think I've learned and will be very mindful of moving forward, which is just when you have more going on, you need a bigger nest egg of liquid funds to help weather a storm so that you don't then force yourself into making tougher decisions.
That's great. Last question for you, Kyle. If you had to start your career over in a completely different industry, and people know that you started very young in the brokerage industry, I think you were 19 or something like that, what would you choose?
Wow. A different profession. Maybe a professional hockey player or something like that. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
too.
You too. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
I would be in the NHL as well.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. I think that would be cool. You're playing a sport. I mean, it's probably not the same if you played a sport at that level and it's for money, you know, the pressure and everything. But I don't know. I think I would love it. The competitive nature of it and making really good money while also playing a sport that you love. That sounds pretty good to me.
No kidding. All right. Well, we'll leave it there, Kyle. How can people find out more about the Green Mortgage Team? And you guys did just have a webinar. I think it's over now, but it was all about the things we talked about today, strategies for renewing your mortgage. So if people are interested in webinars or working with you, reaching out, how can they find out more?
Yeah. Yeah. You can go to our website, greenmortgageteam.ca. The webinars, we record all of them and put them on YouTube too. So if you search up Green Mortgage, you can find our channel where we have all of our webinars that we posted. Lots of webinars on how to qualify for investment properties, how to make your mortgage tax deductible, and of course, you know, how to win and get the best rate on your renewal, that kind of stuff. So lots of ways to engage with us. And you can always email us at info@greenmortgageteam.ca as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for your time. We'll be right back.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Ace Mortgage Broker Kyle Green from the Green Mortgage Team.
Always enjoy having Kyle on the program. Super bright guy. I didn't get to be around for this interview. You stick handled it yourself. But I know from experience that there was a ton of great advice.
Yeah, you know what? The thing about Kyle is I feel like it's the nature of his business. He's talking to people across the country. He's doing webinars. He's doing presentations. It's like he's always got his finger on the pulse. So much up-to-date, timely advice. And today was another one of those conversations. So really appreciate Kyle's time. And that was timely information. Hopefully people get a lot of value out of it.
Yeah, Matt. And what else do we got for the day?
What else do we have for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for all things real estate related, things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you'll see what's going on the podcast. Actually, I find a lot of people are actually just getting that mailer and clicking in to listen recently. I've talked to a couple people. So it's a good way to stay on top of the podcast. We have VIP access to pre-sales. We have deal of the month stats, different types of stats. We did the trivia based on some of those stats that we're sending out. So if you want to get granular and dig into the data, as a lot of people do, that's the LiveWire at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And you can also click buy with us and get access to tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is the best way to monitor listings in Vancouver. Like I said, it's your own personal dashboard for monitoring real estate listings. So you can be very specific about how to create your own criteria. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, Matt, how can people get in touch?
Find me at any point, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that nonpartisan Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We'll have a great week, and we're back here next week with another great episode.
2000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.